morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we are live for a half hour each weekday morning, and we're beginning another broadcast week today, and you could possibly be the first to be on the air with us. Now, I heard a different phone number given over the air a moment ago, and I'm not sure if we're using a different phone number today than usual. The number we usually use is 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. Yes, I'm being informed now that our regular number is the right number. So if you'd like to reach me, we have our lines open at the moment at 1-800-227-5278. Now, I have a question that Joyce emailed me. I don't know where Joyce is listening from, but she simply asked, what happens to pets when they die? Will God allow pets to be with us in heaven? And the answer to that is we really don't know anything about that. The Bible does not give us information about the fate of animals after they die. It is generally assumed that animals, not being like us, not being made in the image of God, are not made with an eternal destiny in mind for them, and that they serve a purpose in this world, and then they're done. Now, one of the things that makes that not too unrealistic is that, of course, most animals are simply part of a food chain. They don't have a large number of significant things they do in their lifetime besides eat and reproduce. Of course, I'm talking about mostly wild animals and even farm animals. But once in a while, an animal becomes dear to a human family or to a human being. And that's when we call it a pet. Now, the problem here is, of course, that a pet is just really an animal that we have become fond of. We could argue that a pet has another value besides that of a wild animal. A wild animal, its value is to pass on its genetics to another generation. That's really what animals do. And, of course, to glorify God in their lifetime. Everything that God has made is for His glory. But pets are animals that have another function, too, and that is to enhance the life of an owner or a family. And, therefore, it gets harder when we think about pets to think of them being like other animals who, when they die, perhaps they just black out and they're gone. We become very attached to our pets like we do to family members, and it's very difficult to accept the possibility that they don't have more to them than the average animal, almost as much to them as a person. Some dogs and cats definitely have personalities that are so distinctive that you'd think they're almost like people. And I guess I'd have to say God only knows. C.S. Lewis, who was simply a Christian philosopher, he was not a theologian, but he believed that there may be some sense in which family pets take on something of the spiritual quality of the family that owns them and may end up having a similar destiny to that family. As much as I respect C.S. Lewis, I don't necessarily think that he has a lot to go on there. It would suggest, of course, that a family pet of a very wicked family would share their destiny too, and that wouldn't seem very fair. If a dog happened to be adopted by a wicked family, and all that family went to hell, and the dog went to hell too because it shared in the spirit of its family, that would seem rather cruel. I think it is likely, although the Bible is not specific on this, that animals do not have eternal life, and that is a distinctive trait that God has given to people. But I could be wrong, because since the Bible is not specific about it, it may be that we'll be surprised. It may be that when we end up with the Lord after this life, we'll find that not only are there animals there, but it's possible that our animals will be there. Only God knows that. And since the Bible does not deny it, we would have no reason to deny it. But we also have no reason to affirm it. We'd have to just leave that matter in God's hands and assume that whatever is the best thing, most conducive to our eternal happiness, and most conducive to what is best in general, will be what God will do, because that's what He'll always do. So we're basically ignorant about the matter of pets in heaven. But it's not impossible. It's not something God has not thought of. I'm sure he's thought of the degree to which certain animals become dear to certain people. And I'm sure that he's got a plan, one way or the other, that will be the most conducive to our happiness in the long run. Maybe that involves our pets. Maybe it does not. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Let's talk to Tom from Southern California. Tom, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Steve. Thank you for having me on. Here's my question. I'll give you my question first and then give you some background. And you might need, I'll stay on in case you need to ask me any questions. But
about a month and a half ago, so we can't have too much background.
Okay. About a month and a half ago, I left my wife of 11 months. I left just out of frustration of not being able to communicate with her, stubbornness, and just not wanting to talk about almost any problems dealing with the marriage. As soon as I left, I knew I had no reason. I mean, there was no reason to leave. I was in sin. About 2 weeks later, we met. We began to reconcile. She said she forgave me, but I'm still out here wandering around. She doesn't want to allow me to come back. And so my question is she now in sin or for not allowing me to come back, or has she not forgiven me fully, or because I'm not here lost.
Is there any reason why you should not be allowed to come back? I mean, you've never been a danger to her, I don't suppose.
No, nothing like that. It was just the lack of communication. The frustration
is your wife,
of not being...
Are you and your wife followers of Christ?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then she should know that reconciliation, in this case, is mandatory. And I would perhaps point out to her 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 10 and 11. 1 Corinthians 7, 10 and 11 says that the man should not put away his wife, and the wife should not leave her husband, and if she has left him, she should be reconciled to him. And so
but I'm the
reconciliation
one
is required. Well, I know, but the point is you want to come back. See, you walked out of the door. You walked out of the door, but you didn't walk out of the marriage.
Right.
I mean, you were gone 2 weeks before you and she reconciled, and she said she forgave you. Okay, so there's a lot of businessmen are away from home more than 2 weeks. That doesn't end the marriage. Obviously, you did the wrong thing in walking out, I assume. I mean, I don't know what was going on that caused you to do that. But if your problems are in communicating with each other, you definitely need to get some kind of input from some mature Christians who can counsel you about that.
Yeah, and, we were in the process of doing that like 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
We were doing that.
Okay, well, you don't give up on your marriage. You've been married 11 months, right?
Yeah,
see, so you don't give up on a marriage after 11 months. I mean, if you had married her and you found that she was, unfaithful and continually, cheating on you, that might be a reason to leave the marriage after 11 months. But poor communication is not an excuse for leaving the marriage. And so, I mean, you made a mistake. You did the wrong thing. And you, I guess, have talked to her and she said she forgives you. Now, if she forgives you, she should put her money where the mouth is and have you back in. And so you can keep working on the marriage. Why doesn't she want you to come back home? Does she?
Her statement is that she needs to work more on herself. And I said, well, can you give me a timetable? It's been more than a month already. I'm lost out here. And she says,
okay,
no.
Whose home is it? Is it her home?
It's her home, yeah.
She owns the home? And
yeah, she owns the home.
Okay, well, you need to get in touch with her and tell her that you're married to her and she's married to you and that she needs to work on herself. It's true, and you need to work on yourself, but you need to work on yourselves in the context of your relationship. And
would you
not
call her... would you call her state of being now... Is that a sin for her not to allow me back based on...
I think so. I think it is. Yeah, I mean the Bible commands her to forgive you and to work, you know, to live together. Uh-huh. I mean you're supposed to live together as a married couple.
Okay.
Now I wouldn't, if I were you, I wouldn't go telling her that she's sinning because although she is, that kind of language is not likely to encourage warm feelings towards you. I would suggest to her, why don't we go out for coffee and look together at the scriptures and see what it says about our situation. And then you don't have to use the word sin. I mean, if she can see that the Bible commands her to do a certain thing, then it seems to me that she could recognize what sin is.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Well, thank you.
Tom, I'm sorry to hear about your situation. It's sad, but at least she said she forgives you, and she's at this point apparently just stalling, letting you come back in. She's not saying you'll never be able to come back.
Well, she did this during the marriage on some issues also. She wouldn't answer and just stall, and I'd never get an answer. So this is just like a repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't understand why I can't come back. And I didn't want to throw the sin in there, but I...
Yeah, well,
what's
I mean,
the matter?
It is a sin.
Can I come back?
And maybe some Christian woman should tell her that she's sinning. I just don't think it'll enhance your relationship for you to go and say you're sinning. If you and she had the kind of relationship where you were welcoming from each other, criticism and welcoming spiritual rebuke from each other for each other's benefit, that might be a different story. But it sounds like she's not looking to you for counsel at this point.
No.
But she does need to realize that she is married to you, and as a married woman, she should be living with you. I mean, assuming you're not dangerous.
Yeah, not dangerous.
Okay.
Okay, well, great counsel. Thank you.
Okay, Tom. God bless you.
God bless you.
Bye now.
Bye.
I'm assuming that when our listeners hear a call like this, that they probably, many of you are praying people, I hope, and will be praying for these situations. So someone emailed me just on the weekend and said they wished I would pray with people on the air. Well, I do pray for people off the air. I generally don't take up the airtime for prayer, not because I don't think it's a valuable thing. I believe prayer is the only answer to many problems that people have. It's just that this program's format is other than that, and I happen to know, because I've heard other programs, you know, which do pray with the callers, to know that many times then people start calling up asking for prayer about everything, and then the program's given over to that instead of what the program's devoted to, which is trying to give biblical answers to your questions. So I it's not like I don't want to pray for these people. I do, and I hope some of you do too. But I wanted to explain that because I did get an email asking, you know, why don't you pray with people on the program? I have done so on occasion, but I'm assuming... See, I don't like to... force our listeners to pray if it's not on their heart. I just encourage all of our listeners who have it on their heart to pray for these people. And I hope you will, because obviously there's a lot of marriages in trouble like that who need prayer. Let's talk to Richard from Riverside, California next. Hi, Richard. Welcome.
Hi, Steve. How are you this morning?
I'm all right. Thank you.
I just wanted to... I heard your comment about the animals and how we're to view animals and the Bible and so forth. I always think about when Jesus's birth, when he was born, that he was rejected by humankind and was not even given a place in the inn. And he ended up in a stable with animals. And they were actually the ones that greeted his birth. And I can't help but think that they're... And I think you're right in saying that the Bible really doesn't say much, but I think oftentimes what the Bible doesn't say, but what you can read in circumstances can tell you a lot more than sometimes even the spoken word. But I always think about that they were the ones that were there that greeted him. And they didn't reject Joseph and Mary and say, or you can't come in this stable. They actually gave him a place for his holy birth. And I think that's something to meditate on. I'm not trying to make any comments about the animal's necessary state of holiness, or will they be in heaven, or things of that sort. But I think if you think about that one situation, it tells you something in what it doesn't tell you.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure what it tells us, because I don't know that the animals did greet him. The Bible doesn't say anything about the animals greeting him. We read that he was, laid in a manger, but we're not told in the Bible anything about the animals there. Whether there were animals there present or not, we don't know. There could have been, but if they were, they didn't invite him. You know, the animals did not invite him into their barn. If they were in a barn, then they were there at the hospitality of the barn owner, not the animals' invitation. But I'm not trying to diminish the value of animals. God made a lot of animals. He must love them, and I love them too. I love animals too. But I would also just kind of correct something, and that is that we don't read anywhere in the Bible that Jesus was rejected at his birth. The idea that, you know, an innkeeper turned him away is not... that's the stuff of Christian plays in churches at Christmas time. There's nothing in the Bible about an innkeeper or anyone rejecting Jesus at his birth. There's reference to shepherds and wise men coming and honoring him at his birth. And there's actually no record to anybody rejecting him. What the Bible actually says was that they laid him in a manger because there was no room in the inn. So it would appear that rather than people rejecting him, there was no room for them in a particular lodging place, and so they laid him where they could find to lay him. And so there's no suggestion in the Bible of people rejecting him at his birth. Certainly he was rejected later in his life, but he was very much honored by different classes of people, Gentile priest types, priest astrologer types from Persia, as well as Judean shepherds on the hillsides, and of course Mary and Joseph, and who knows how many others. But the animals in the around are not mentioned in the Bible. They may have been there. It would be a natural place for them to be, but I'm not really sure that these facts tell us anything about the subject we were talking about, which would be whether animals go to heaven or not. Let's go to Debbie from Denver, Colorado next. Debbie, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thank you so much for letting me be on here. I guess you have a lot of animal lovers this morning.
I guess so, because you're not the last on our switchboard. There's more besides you.
Okay. Well, I wanted to talk to you today about, I really, really think that throughout the eternity, as we're with the Lord, I think He won't hold back anything that'll bring us true joy. And I really think that might include pets, too. Like you said, the Bible doesn't say, but maybe 3.5 months, 4 months ago, I was in prayer for my family and friends. And then I also asked the Lord, I said, Lord, as I looked on my animals, 2 dogs, a cat, fish, I just like a farm here. But I said, Lord, what about these innocents? What are you going to do, with them? At the end, I said, they're faithful to me. What's going to be done with them? I said, Lord, if they can't be with us in heaven, can you make another spot for them, a different planet whatsoever? You're in control of everything. I said, Lord God, can you put them somewhere where they'll be happy? I know the word.
Okay, and how does this story end?
This story ends that I just heard a word in my ear. I said, trust me. It said, just trust me. And then I just stopped and I said, that's what I've been not doing throughout the whole process of thinking about the animals. I haven't been just trusting that the Lord knows what's best for all of us. And I wanted to say that we have to leave everything with the Lord and trust Him.
Amen.
That He's going to handle everything and everything will work out fine as He sees fit.
Amen. I appreciate that call, Debbie. God bless you. Thanks for those thoughts. Let's talk to Roberti, who's also on the same subject, apparently, from Alameda, California. Hi, Roberti. Welcome.
good morning. I hope we haven't exhausted this subject. But
I'm not sure. Go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up that along with 8 human beings, God preserved the animals on Noah's Ark.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do mean a great deal to him. And Also, in Isaiah, there's a description of the peaceful kingdom where animals will exist also.
And in Isaiah chapter 11 and Isaiah chapter 65, it mentions lions and oxen and lambs and leopards and so forth. Yeah. Now, if those are references to real animals, they may be that there will be animals, you know, eternally with us. Whether they'll be the same animals that lived here or animals that will be new created, we don't know.
Well, I have been a reader for the blind, and I have been around guide dogs, and I have to tell you that those are some of the most noble, intelligent creatures that I've ever encountered. And maybe more so than a lot of people you might encounter. So that's all I had to add.
Okay, I appreciate that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for your call. All right, you're listening to The Narrow Path, and so far most of the calls have been on the subject of pets in heaven. But that's not necessarily, we don't necessarily have an assigned subject for the day. We take any calls on any subjects. And therefore, if you'd like to call, you can reach me here on the air if we have time at 1-800-227-5278. Our next caller is Jose from Stockton, California. Jose, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning, Steve. I got a question, but it's not involving pets. It's a different one. Mine's involving 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 and 12, which read, a woman should learn in quietness and full submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man. She must be silent. What are your thoughts, or what is Paul really saying there?
Well, there's a lot of opinions about what Paul is saying there. My own opinion is based on the context, which is immediately after this. Of course, there's a chapter division, but Paul didn't divide the book into chapters. That was done by other people later on. Paul simply wrote one continuous letter. And immediately after, he talks about the fact that he does not allow the women to be the teachers and authorities over the men in the church. He goes into a detailed description of the qualifications for those that he does allow to be leaders in the church. He refers to them as overseers. Some translations say bishops. Overseers were like, another word for them in the Bible is elders. We might think of them as pastors. Although in the early church, a church didn't have an individual elder or overseer or an individual pastor. They had a group of them called an eldership or a group of overseers, who did the pastoral work for the congregation. Now, these men who were the elders are described in 1 Timothy chapter 3 in great detail, and they have to be the husband of one wife, and they have to have children who are godly, and they have to have a large number of qualifications.
Right.
In other words, the majority of men, even the majority of men in the church, would not qualify to be overseers by Paul's list. And I think it's in that context that he says, I don't allow a woman to teach or have authority over a man. What I think he's saying is, when it comes to appointing overseers, he doesn't place women in that role, and he doesn't even place most men in that role. There's only a very narrow, group of persons in the church that would possibly qualify. And they would be men, but they would not be all the men. They would be a very few of the men in the church. And so I think that Paul is simply telling us that when he appoints leaders in the church, he appoints certain kinds of men to be leaders, and he doesn't appoint women to that role. Now, when he talks about the women being quiet or learning in quietness and submission, there's a possibility that what he has in mind here is that he's finding that there were some women in the church who were trying to press themselves into those positions of leadership, and that he's saying these women should content themselves with, not being in the leadership, just like most men should content themselves with not being in the leadership. And certainly children should content themselves with not being leaders. In fact, the majority of the people in the church should content themselves with not being leaders. And if there are women who are kind of campaigning for positions in that role. They should just be content to submit quietly, like others have to do. And so I don't think that Paul is trying to say that women can't say anything in church. I don't think he's even saying they can't ever teach. I think he's saying he doesn't make them overseers in the church. He says, I don't allow women to teach or have authority over a man. I think that these are teaching and have authority over the man, where basically he's thinking of that in terms of the eldership. And he doesn't allow women in those particular specific roles.
I see. So those roles are just almost like they're dedicated or reserved for the leadership of the men in the church.
Right, and not just for all the men, but for a very few good men. You know, that's basically
right.
What he's doing.
Yeah, because in chapter 3 it does list all the qualifications for both the overseers and the deacons.
Right, and he says there that he must be a husband of one wife. An overseer.
Right.
So obviously he has to be a man. And it says he must be able to teach. So it's clear that the elders or the overseers were not only leaders but teachers in the church. And it's more than a coincidence, I think, that he mentions leading and teaching when he says, I don't put a woman in that role. So that's what I understand Paul to be saying.
Okay. Well, thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Jose. Good talking to you. My apologies to those who are waiting online and would like to be on. We have some callers who will not be able to get on today, but you certainly will be welcome to call tomorrow morning. We are on Monday through Friday at this same time, and I hope that if you're not a regular listener, you will become one and a caller whenever you have questions that come up about the Bible in your mind. The Narrow Path is the name of this program, and we are a listener-supported ministry. We pay for the radio time. It costs lots and lots of money, but you may notice we don't sell things or have commercials or anything like that. We just depend on God to provide through listeners like yourselves. If you'd like to help us out, you can go to our website, thenarrowpath.com, and find out how to do that. Or write to us at The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 3633, Santa Cruz, California.